This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 104.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello, welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese picture Goodfellas one bullet-dodging minute at a time. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
How you doing, guy?
And Josh Flanagan.
Hey.
And our special guest for this week has been Vice President and Executive Editor of Marvel Entertainment, Ryan Panagos.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing?
Have you been having fun, Ryan?
I've been having a lovely time.
Okay.
Well, this minute, 104, starts off with Jimmy asking an ominous question and ends with Tommy telling another funny story. So first, it's interesting to point out that this conversation between Jimmy and Henry did happen, but it happened immediately after the heist, and it happened in a car.
Yep.
When Jimmy revealed to Henry that they did pull off the score and he was going to get some money, that's when he immediately started wondering about whether or not Maury was going
to
talk.
And this was because Maury previously had threatened to go to the DA, right, when there was an altercation over gambling bets and payments and all this sort of stuff, and Maury threatened to drop the dime. And so
he was dead when he said that.
Yeah, so he was already branded as a potential rat.
Yeah, and so in this minute, Henry says in the voiceover, that's the minute he knew Maury was going to die. That happened immediately, like within 24 hours of the heist being over.
Yeah.
So this, I mean,
Maury was never going to get that $500,000.
But what's funny also in real life was that actually we were talking a couple of days ago about who got their money and all this sort of stuff. In real life, Marty Krugman, mm-hmm. Maury in the movie, told Henry that Jimmy gave him $50,000 right before Christmas. And what does Marty do? But he turns around and gives $40,000 of it to the guy that worked at Lufthansa who gave him the tip.
That guy also got paid $80,000 from the heist money.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah.
But he practiced what he preached then.
Yeah, exactly. He did unto others as he wanted done to himself, and he got screwed in the process.
We're going to talk about that guy next week.
Yeah.
So one thing I thought was interesting is, do you have anything else in the conversation on the outside? Or?
The outside conversation I think is amazing because they're walking, and Jimmy says, hey, you think Maury tells his wife everything? And then freeze frame, and you get the Henry narration saying, and that's what I knew Jimmy was going to kill Maury. That freeze frame lasts 9 seconds.
I thought there was something wrong with my computer for just a minute when I was I was like, wait, what? Why did it freeze? Yep. And then I was like, oh, that's the thing that happens.
Because we haven't had a freeze frame so long.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, and it's very – it just looks like what happens when a video freezes. I was like, wait, no, it's not.
But it's a very long freeze frame.
I guess it's not one of the iconic ones that I remember looking at.
Yeah, and I also like how once Henry explains that and the freeze frame lets go, Henry is trying to save Maury by saying, yeah, he's so he tells everybody everything. He's talked so much nobody listens to him.
He kind of says that, but the first thing he says, yeah, he talks to everybody. And I was like, what are you doing?
Well, he's trying to make it seem like he's not reliable anyway, so no one's going to believe him.
Yeah, which is funny because I actually was deposed in a court case once. And that was, I am allowed. It was years ago.
Was it the Asaro case?
I'm pretty sure that nothing to do with the mafia that doesn't exist. But I was called as a witness in a case that had to do with someone bad mouthing a former employer, and the employer was claiming that it caused him them to lose work, right? And so I got called in to give testimony, and they said, "Did this guy say these things?" And I'm like, "Yeah, no, of course he said those things." And they're like, "Okay, did you believe him?" I'm like, no, the guy talks so much nobody believed a word out of his mouth. Exactly what Henry says to Jimmy. That's the testimony I gave because it was true. The guy talks so much he was just an idiot. You know, like you didn't believe him, which I feel is a valid defense, right?
Before we get past the freeze frame, maybe because I was focused on this minute and watched it a couple times, but it just felt more intense. And then they were talking. They were just the whole scene is them talking about this guy who. You know, through all the bullshit that's been going on with him busting balls and this, that, and the other thing, they've known him for so long. And it's like, now it's like, okay, he's got to die. And that felt just like, I don't know,
cold.
Weird and intense to me. Yeah. And that freeze frame right there, and like you were saying, Josh, it's such a, like a, almost a random shot, obviously not random because the way Scorsese works, but like, it's just like a jarred, whoop, stop, and then off they go. I loved it.
Yeah.
I remember that transition from you think she, you know, talks to, you think he talks to his wife about it to the line, and that's when I knew Maury was going to get whacked. Like, that's a big thing that I took away from this movie. It was just how subtle everything was. They don't say any, you know, like.
Well, that was an observation I had, which is that this is an entire conversation about whether or not they're going to kill someone, and the words "I'm going to kill him" or "he's dead" or anything never happen.
And even down to like as they walk on the street, the dialogue is even pretty hushed.
Yeah,
like it the music's still going on. That Cream song. You guys may remember it from yesterday. I can
recall.
I can recap.
No, that's fine.
Sunshine of Your Love is still going on, and but like the dialogue is kind of buried under that music there.
Yeah,
a little bit. Which is unusual.
What's great is it's never said explicitly what they're talking about, but Jimmy knows that Henry knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, which is like it's a nuance, which the thing is that like I've had relationships with people where that happens. You know what I mean? Like where there's definitely
where people get killed.
Yeah, exactly. No, but there are Connor, there have been times where we've been out and I've said something to you and I didn't want to say it, but you knew exactly what I was talking about. You know what I mean? Like when you work closely with someone or have a strong relationship with them, that can happen. I mean, it happens with my dad all the time where I know exactly what he's talking about, you know, but I think it carries through, you know, and actually into tomorrow's minute, it happens again too, where Jimmy says something and Henry knows what he means, but he never actually says it. You know, but it's an acknowledgement of, yes, that's what we were talking about, which the whole language of no language in this movie, I just constantly find amazing.
But also that the stakes are so high with them not saying the thing. Yeah. I mean, like, and this was another thing I talked about in that interview with Leota, is that he said when he listened to the tapes of Henry Hill, it was just how comfortable these guys were with violence and with brutality. And, you know, like, and they'd talk about somebody getting killed like it was nothing. And that's what's happening here. They're talking about ending a person's life without saying anything about it. Like, yeah, it's just a regular conversation. And that is not something that we are used to.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's interesting.
And the only thing that Jimmy says is, bring him here.
Yeah.
And it's not even like that to anyone else, that could mean anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the bring him here was just like, to me, I'm like, oh my God.
Well, earlier we heard keep him here.
Yeah.
Which meant the same thing.
Yeah. They enter what I assume is his bar.
Yeah, it's Roberts. It's Roberts. Yeah.
So is Roberts a illegally converted house?
No, it's a bar. That's just, I mean, we talked about it. But as they're
walking down the street, you're just passing row house, row house, row house.
Yeah.
And then it looks like this is another row house that's been illegally converted.
Well, on the corner, it's like the bar on the corner.
I'm not saying there's not, Josh. I'm just saying, is that what it is, though? When I lived in Brooklyn, there was illegally converted places on my block, too. But
yeah,
mm-hmm. it was interesting that this was sort of a, because from the outside, it looks really kind of run down. There's not like a window.
Well, in the real life, it's Nears Tavern, which is on that corner, and it's just there. It's been there for years, you know. Like it's just somebody built a bar in that building, you know. Whether or not it was a residence at some point, who knows? But that's not terribly uncommon in New York.
Well, I didn't say it wasn't common. In fact, it's very common in Brooklyn. in between 2012 and 2013, the NYPD busted 46 illegal gambling dens.
Ooh.
And Brooklyn is by far the most common place to find these illegally converted gambling houses.
Well, because that's the thing, is that they would have, I mean, and the Italians as well, too, they would have social clubs, you know, and like all those, you know, like all those black and white grainy photos of FBI surveillance of the mafia where they're all standing outside a door on the street in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. They're standing outside their social club, which is just,
Let me ask you that. Can you explain to me? I mean, I kind of get an idea, but how would you explain what a social club is? Because you still see them to this day.
Clubhouse.
It's a clubhouse, yeah.
Place to hang out, gamble, and drink.
That property.
Yep.
And then who's paying for it?
So
they're paying for it out of the stuff they get off the truck, the shrimps and lobsters.
And that's the thing, is that like it's gone on for years, and the places like Soho House and stuff like that are technically social clubs. You know, it's just basically where any group of people organize and members then rent a space. Yeah, exactly.
Great jackets.
There was one on in Brooklyn on Fifth Avenue that for years when I lived there I wanted to buy, because it was an old social club. It even had the sign still on the door.
Oh, that's great.
For years it was just closed, and then one day there was a fucking boutique there. But there was like a 5 or 6 year period where I was like, I shouldn't buy that place. Just have a social club.
It'd be so cool. Me and my friends in San Francisco talked about it. Like 5 years ago, we talked about renting an apartment out in the Sunset where it was cheap. And then putting pinball machines in and having like a social club around pinball, you know, whatever. But we didn't do that.
Didn't you realize you weren't taking scores? You couldn't pay for it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
All right, so we cut
financially. This makes no sense.
We cut to the inside, and where there's a raucous card game going on, and lots of laughing and ball busting and cigar smoking and drinking. We know that now this is the night that Maury's to die.
Well, here's my question. So Jimmy wants Henry to bring him there later.
Yeah.
And is this the later? Because the lighting to me, I don't know. I guess I get stuck on some of the timing here, because he's already there. Already bring him? Because he talks about, remember that thing we're going to take care of later, or whatever he says. It's, you know, it's a little.
The walk outside is during the day. This is later at night. Just later. That's all.
You know what's really cool? Is that they go from inside, at the end of the last minute, they go from inside Roberts to they cut outside walking in the day, and then they arrive back at Roberts.
Yep.
It's a very strange way.
It's hard. Unless you're really paying attention, it would be hard to follow the time and the day and the focus of the narration here.
Yeah. I mean, like, I was like, oh, they switched, they put them outside walking on the street in Queens, and they end up right back where they were 12 seconds ago, and I was like, that was kind of cool. I've never seen anybody pull that off, because that shouldn't work.
I also like the shot of them walking, by the way, because if you remember earlier in the movie, remember every outside shot, it just seemed hot.
Right.
Like every outside shot was in July, and they're sweating, and the radio's on, whereas now we're in the phase of the movie where every outside shot is cold.
That's really interesting.
And they're bundled up, and you know.
I mean, summer into fall into winter, which is kind of interesting.
And they really get, at least in this scene walking outside, they really captured like new gray New York winter, right? Like that, like the, it's funny because I feel like we having ties to New York or whatever, take it for granted. But like, if you look at the lighting of the shot outside, that like, that's what life looks like right now, you know, like that.
Very. I was instantly like, I was on that street when they cut to outside.
You were there.
I mean, not, you know, I mean,
you had to have been like 11.
Yeah.
He was there with Clapton.
Oh
yeah. Me and EC. I want to celebrate one thing that happens in this minute.
Okay.
Frankie Carbone says a line, and I understood every single syllable of it.
While he's sorting the cards?
Maury, stop breaking my balls, all right? And, I mean, from what we've heard from him before, this was a clarion light through the storm. It was just...
I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that it's casual Carbone. Right, I mean, he's just got a plaid shirt on, no tie, open collar. You see the chain, you know.
Maybe if his shirt is buttoned up, then
it constricts his vocal cords, and he can't talk.
And then he starts speaking Italian-ish.
After that moment, we're thrown into and the focus is not on it, but we're thrown into Tommy telling a story.
All right, so at this point, Maury's set to die. Jimmy knows, Henry knows, Tommy obviously knows. Carbone, I guess, knows. I guess no, I don't think Carbone ever knows anything. I guess
Carbone. Yeah. No.
He has to. He knows about a second plan.
The other guy at the table is mysterious beard and glasses guy.
Your favorite.
So I think it's nice that the mafia wants to give Maury a nice send-off. You know, they're all pals with him. They're having a good time with him. They're joking with him. They're making him feel like one of the guys, which is all he's ever wanted.
Well, yeah, and I think we'll talk more about that tomorrow when the pivotal decision happens. But
right, but you know, at this point, while we're watching it, he's gonna die, and they're give him a nice day, one more day for Maury.
Yeah,
one more good day.
Gambling at the table.
So. Maury's last day.
Maury wanted to short be one film of the guys. By Martin Scorsese. We talked about that. His whole goal was to feel like he was one of the guys, and here he is, one of the guys.
Yeah, true. I like Henry managing the time. He's like, well, I figured I had a couple hours before it actually would do it, and there was still time to talk Jimmy out of it.
It's interesting that he cares about Maury, because earlier I wondered if he did, but he doesn't want him to kill him.
I think he cares about harmony. I think he wants everyone to be happy and no one to rock the boat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's been his MO for the whole movie.
It's bad for business.
Yeah. Everybody's making money.
Tommy, do you think that's improv? How much of that, or is it?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. And this, by the way, is one of my favorite Tommy stories.
It is. It's really great.
You know why? Because I don't have any context for it. Nope. And it's not the focus. So you're just picking up little details from it. And like, actually, the stuff tomorrow is better, you know.
Yeah, but you can't. Don't waste it yet.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's this is all improv, right? I mean, Tommy doing his.
Yeah.
So.
So at first I wondered if Jimmy and Henry were just sitting at that poker table, just staring at Maury and smoking. And I thought, that's going to be a giveaway. Because that's what it appears that they're doing until you realize that Tommy is telling a story.
Yeah. And even at one point when they go to Henry gets impatient and he goes, come on, enough with this.
Well, they're afraid he might fold under questioning. And he did.
All right. We got anything else in this minute? Aside from Maury's PGA golfer outfit?
Well, no. His master's sweater?
Yeah.
So Tommy is telling a story, which means the fuck count is 6.
Wow. All right, so let's turn the spotlight on our friend Ryan here. So, Ryan, do you remember the first time you saw the movie?
You know, I was trying to think about that because I've been listening to the show and hearing a lot of other people's responses, and I honestly don't remember the first time I saw it. It just feels like it was part of growing up almost, you know, one of those movies that was just sort of there. But I do remember it was – Goodfellas was one of the first movies – or an early movie in my relationship with my wife that she had never seen it. And when we got together, I was like, what do you mean?
And you had never heard of Cream, so it was perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Like she had to teach me about Cream and I had to teach her about Goodfellas. And it was one of those movies that we watched very early on. And that was, to me, that's more of a nice memory for me about the movie. And
did she enjoy it the first time, or did you have to keep showing it to her again and again?
She's enjoyed it, yeah. And, okay. You know,
she has enjoyed it, is what you just said.
she has definitely enjoyed it. We watched it again the other day, and she was trying to pick up, you know, she was picking up little pieces and remembering them very fondly.
Let's not forget that this, despite the violence and the true crime, it is a romantic movie.
Yeah.
There's a
kind of.
There's the sweeping love story of Henry and Karen, which you know I find inspiring.
And Henry and his girlfriend.
The gun to her husband's head.
You don't know how I feel. So Ryan, growing up on Long Island and in New York and living in New York City and stuff like that, do you feel any sort of kinship or do you, like did you see the stuff out going on when you were growing up or?
Not too much. I mean, you know, growing up, we had a lot more of the supposed mafia in the news.
Yeah.
The Genovese crime family, as they would have been called, or Gotti or whatever. And so it sort of was just like around the periphery, but it, you know, I grew up in like Western Nassau, very close to Belmont Racetrack. So I went to the track a bunch with my grandfather, you know, wholesome activities that you do, but it never really felt like this connection, like these guys, but I knew, you sort of knew guys who were like them.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, you know, I was never really close to them because it just wasn't who we were. But there was like one particular friend of mine when I was growing up, and like his father was definitely one of these guys. I'll leave it at that.
Is he the guy with the beard and the sunglasses?
We get to see more of him, I think. And I've had many questions.
So Ryan, at the racetrack, were there a lot of guys in short sleeves, pork pie hats, and cigars?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It was like a lot of I picture a lot of light blue, light blue shirts.
Did you have like one of those newsboy caps? And did your pants go down to your knees and you had socks pulled all the way up and you were
paper for you, sir?
Yeah, and did you call your grandfather? Did you call your grandfather Pop? Hey, Pops, are we going to win the race, Pops?
No, sadly, none of that.
Oh, gosh, that's too bad. Yeah, no, it's funny. It's funny, though, because I feel we grew up after this golden age.
Yeah.
It's true golden age, you know, and unfortunately, the majority of the Italian Americans that we grew up with, it was more of a Z Cavaricci, you know, like kind of era than you know, classy pointy collars and that sort of thing. It's unfortunate. But
yeah, but there's sort of some like residue, so to speak, that like skimmed down and was still there, especially, you know, kids growing up in high school and whatever, especially in my neighborhood, very Italian where I grew up, like, and that fit more into like the families of this realm.
You're not Italian, are you? No, you're not.
No, I'm not. I'm Colombian and a little Irish and German.
Oh, that's too bad.
Thanks.
He's been doing that the whole time. Don't. Just kind of move along.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know.
I heard the stuff about the Jewish wedding.
We could talk much more about you growing up on the South Shore and me growing up on the North Shore, but I think that's for non-podcast time. But yeah. I think that's definitely, you know, I was a little more sheltered in my Northwest Suffolk area. But who knows?
Ryan, in your time and working in entertainment, have you come across anyone involved in Goodfellas?
That's a good question.
You've talked to a lot of celebrities.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many people in this movie. I feel like I've met Ray Liotta. It's one. I don't know if I have, but it's.
I love that sentence.
I feel like I have at some point or another.
I don't have any way to confirm that. Check up on it. But I feel like I've met Liotta. Like he's like your spiritual soulmate. I just feel like, you know, we're of a piece.
You know, it's just one of those. So growing up, my mom and my grandmother were in New York City real estate. And so I also met, like, there were celebrity stories or celebrity things in there. So it might have been when I was younger. But there's definitely, I'm going to say yes. How about that? I'm going to say yes. There's definitely a Liotta connection somewhere.
All right. More than we got.
We got nothing.
Well, Connor rode the escalator in Martin Scorsese once, so that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That should be prominently featured on our website.
It really should. You're featuring someone who rode the escalator, Martin Scorsese, in Union Square
2005.
Once.
2005.
2006.
10 years ago.
Featuring another guest, another host who lived down the street from where they filmed 15 years later.
I had reservations at Tribeca Grill once. Well, that's De Niro's place, right?
I think I've told the story on the show before, but Ryan, people we mutually know met De Niro and Leota during the filming of this. Brian Meehan and went to go walk his dog by where they were filming, and then they played with the dog. And I remember Brian telling me that at a show once.
That's great. I don't remember ever hearing that.
Yeah. Fun times. Okay. Anything else?
No.
Let's take it home.
All right, so that was it for minute 104. You can tune in tomorrow for 105. Until then, check us out on Twitter at GoodfellowsMin and on Instagram and Facebook at GoodfellowsMinute. And you can find all of our episodes at GoodfellowsMinute.com. Ryan, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Agent M and on the This Week in Marvel podcast.
And finally, if you have any questions or anything of note, you can email us at contact@GoodfellowsMinute.com. And to support the show, go to goodfellowsminute.com/support. You can shop via Amazon or go to patreon.com/GFM. That's where you can become a patron. And if you are a patron at the proper level, you get your own mob nickname. And we get two nicknames going out tomorrow on tomorrow's show. So check that out. And until then, goodbye.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is on.